This is NHL Radio. Now for NHL Hour with Commissioner Gary Bettman on NHL Home Ice.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the NHL Hour. I'm Gary Bettman, and alongside me, or across the table from me, is Bill Clement, and we're coming to you together this week, live from the NHL store powered by Reebok in New York City. The call-in number, as always, is 1-877-NHL on XM. That's 1-877-645-6696. We'll take your calls, and later we'll be joined by the president of the St. Louis Blues, Mr. John Davidson, or as he's affectionately known in the trade, JD.
Wonder how JD's sleeping these days.
Probably like a baby. Because I think if you go back to February 21st, they were in last place. And the fact that they are 1 point out with five games to go from the playoffs, that is, he's got to feel real good about this season. Listen, I'm sure knowing the competitor that he is,
right.
Nobody wants to make the playoffs more than he does. But this is an incredible story coming out of St. Louis.
Without a doubt. And they deserve so much credit for what they've done. The march has been, if they can make the playoffs, it would be, I don't know how we rate, and if there's a way to quantify comebacks, but I can't imagine that in the last decade or two there's been anything even close to this, if they make it.
Well, I'm not in a position to argue with you because I don't have the statistical information to back it up, but it sounds right. It is incredible, and it's great to see the Blues doing so well and to see the city's response again to the team. This has always been a great hockey market, a great city for sports, but hockey in particular, the Blues are beloved. And they went through a few years there where they weren't quite as beloved, so it's nice to see them loved.
I want to know the rest of the story. The last time we spoke, the blizzard was hitting Denver, and you were trying to get to Phoenix to ostensibly save the Coyotes. No. That's not why you were going. No. Okay.
Oh, boy. You know, that's why we get all this crazy commentary, because people know you're sitting here with me, and they think you've got some inside info, which, you know, tell them how long a conversation we had before we took the air.
Less than 4 seconds?
That's about right.
Right. First of all, the blizzard part. Did you get to Phoenix close to when you'd planned to?
Yes.
Wow.
And the amazing thing is we took off in the blizzard. There was snow everywhere. My guess is we were one of the few planes to get out. And we're feeling good. Frank Brown was with me. And so, as was Deputy Commissioner Bill Daly. And we're feeling really good about the fact that we got out of Denver, and the worst was yet to come, even though it was bad. The drive to the airport was completely snow-covered. I mean, they were having a first-class blizzard. And the takeoff and the climb, the ascent, was not too bad, despite predictions that it was going to be very bumpy. And then we land in Phoenix, and there are like 50-mile-an-hour winds, and the landing was horrendous.
Worse than the takeoff.
Worse than the takeoff. So, you know, even though it was 80 degrees out and it looked beautiful, it was windy like crazy. So I was there on Thursday night and Friday. We can talk about that more in a second. And then from there on Friday afternoon, I went to Anaheim to go to the Ducks game on Friday night, a game that the Ducks lost that they probably wish they had won against Edmonton. And then I stayed for Saturday night because the Samueli Foundation, Henry and Susan Samueli, own the Ducks and USA Hockey, the league, and the Discovery Science Center in Santa Ana unveiled a new exhibit called The Science of Hockey, which the Samueli Foundation funded, and it is just marvelous. It's a permanent exhibit, 3,000 square feet, principally for children, although it's really pretty good for adults, and it's all hockey and science and physics and physiology and how using our game as a learning device for children, very interactive. So for anybody who's down in Orange County, when you take the kids to Disney World and I don't know if Knott's Berry Farm's still around, but you should stop at the Discovery Science Center in Santa Ana. This museum, I believe, is attended by 500,000 children a year.
Wow.
So not only is it good for children to once again see how hockey is relevant and all sorts of nice and important things, I think it's also going to be great for people who aren't as familiar with the game
sure.
to learn a little bit more about it and have a better connection. So anyway, it was a long trip, and then when I red-eyed back on Saturday night, it was, of course, foggy and raining back in New Jersey when we landed. And so a good time of travel was had by all.
Yep, and I know we're just going to have people with incredible attitudes, regardless of weather, calling to talk to you. They're always in a good mood. How many, what percentage? Well, first of all, 877-645-6696, 877-645-6696. If you have a comment or a question for the NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman, now's the time.
So anyway, I was in Phoenix to get an update.
Yeah.
Jerry Moyes, who owns the club, and his lawyers have been involved in a process of dealing with the expressions of interest, and there have been numerous for people to buy the club. There are a variety of issues that everybody's working on with the city of Glendale concerning the building, but the process continues. Expensive transactions like these don't happen by snapping your fingers, but I did get the update, and that was good. The other thing that was interesting to me was considering the fact that Elton John and Billy Joel were in concert in downtown Phoenix. We were out in Glendale. Across the street in the, the University of Phoenix Stadium where the Cardinals play, they had the NCAA basketball tournament going on with 22,000 people. And considering the fact that in terms of the Coyotes season, the game that I was at didn't have a lot of importance to the Coyotes. They really had a terrific crowd that was enthusiastic and into the game. So
now I've read that you were quoted as saying that the team would not move from Phoenix.
That's the plan. That's what we believe, and that's what we're working to. And I have no reason to think right now that they would. I think it will continue to work well and get even better as the team overcomes some of the issues that it's had. Speaking of overcoming things, think about this. There are 11 days left in the season, and there are 11 playoff berths that are still up for grabs. And, you know, it's kind of amazing to think back, at least for me, to October 4th and 5th when I was in Prague and Stockholm starting the season. It has gone in the blink of an eye, and it's really incredible that the races are still as incredibly competitive as they are. And so tonight's schedule features seven games that have playoff implications. In the West, Vancouver will seek its 12th consecutive home victory in a game against Anaheim, which has won 7 of 8. St. Louis, who we just talked about and has played extremely well, will try to rebound from a loss in Chicago last night and keep its drive for the playoffs alive against Detroit. And we'll talk Blues, as I said, in a few minutes when J.D. is here with us. In the East, the Rangers visit Carolina, and neither team is assured of making the playoffs, though each remains in the hunt for first-round home ice advantage. Think about that. They're in the hunt for first-round home ice advantage, or they might not make the playoffs. Incredible. And so it may take until April 12th, a week from Sunday, for us to understand after 186 days who's going to actually be in the playoffs. Actually, the other day, Columbus coach Ken Hitchcock said, this is the playoffs to get into the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a lot of truth to that. And I was in Miami yesterday because I was at the Sports Business Journal conference that they throw. Tomorrow night they have a banquet for the 40 sports executives under 40 in the sports business. And Keith Wachtel, who actually runs corporate sponsorship and the like for us, is one of the people being honored. And I was down there on a panel yesterday. But I guess it was Tuesday night. I was watching the game out of Columbus. I think they beat Nashville 2-1. That building, Nationwide Arena, was going berserk. And it's really nice to see how vibrant, you know, again, another team that had never made the playoffs, yeah, went through a little down period. They are back in a big way. While we're talking hockey, before we get to the callers, congratulations to Bemidji State, Boston University, Miami of Ohio, not the Miami I was at in Florida, and the University of Vermont for making it to the Frozen Four, which will be played next week at the Verizon Center, home of the Capitals in Washington. And Bemidji State is a Cinderella story, which I'm not happy about. They only reached Division I status in 1999-2000, and this is their first time in the Frozen Four, and they did it at the expense of Cornell, my alma mater, and but what are you going to do? And actually, they beat them pretty handily, so it is what it is. Joel Otto is probably the best-known NHL player to have played for Bemidji.
Was he not one of Brian Burke's first clients?
I don't know.
I think he might have. I think
really?
He might have been.
Well, you know,
well, I know he was Berkey's client. Berkey got him a job. He got them got him to try out with Calgary.
So let's go with it. It makes for a good story. And by the way, for those of you who don't know where that is, it's in Minnesota. San Jose's Mike Greer is a Boston University alumnus, and his Sharks teammate Dan Boyle played for Miami of Ohio, while Vermont counts Martin Saint-Louis of the Lightning as their alum, Tim Thomas of Boston, and former Flyer John LeClair. So there's a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah, really. But it's all good.
Yeah, I think it's all good.
And I think players behave better this time of year. I mean, I think your office...
Oh, don't say that. That's like the kiss of death. Why jinx it?
Because there's so much at stake, they do behave better. I mean, I keep picking up the newspapers, and there's never anything negative about Coley Campbell having to wrap anybody's knuckles, at least not very severely this time of year.
But
so that's all good.
But I think what you see this time of year, and by the way, we didn't take the officials away and replace them with clones. We didn't reprogram them. We haven't changed the instructions. But at this time of year, going in, particularly the first round of the playoffs, everybody gets a little crankier on officiating. It's no different, believe me, the officiating than it's been all along. But the passion and the view of the world that people have when a call is made against their team or they don't get the call they wanted rises to a whole new level. But that's okay. That's what we love about this time
of
year.
Speaking of the calls that we want, we have a bunch, shall we?
Why don't we take some?
Yep.
Why don't we start with Frank on Long Island? You're on with Bill and Gary. This is XM 204 and Sirius 208. Oh, Frank.
Come on, Frank. Bring it.
Come on. We hear the connection. You know, speaking of bad connections, we'll give Frank another second. I was miserable last week in Denver. The technical problems we were having, I was hearing feedback from here. I couldn't see the call board. I missed having the ability to just look at you, Bill Clement. I don't like doing these when I'm by myself on the road.
They're harder. You got nothing to play off of, and especially when technically it doesn't go perfectly because you're helpless.
I felt helpless.
Yeah.
Now, some people would suggest I'm helpless all the time. Speaking of helpless, Frank, are you helpless or are you with us? Going, gone. Frank is...
Thank you, Frank.
Thank you. Alan in Wisconsin, you're on with Bill and Gary. This is Sirius XM, and we hope you're there.
Yes, I am. Commissioner Bettman and Mr. Clement, this is a true honor to talk to both of you. Commissioner Bettman, I think what you do, making yourself success or accessible to fans like myself, I think is unbelievable. I really appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule. And, Mr. Clement, I wish I could see you on TV more often. I miss you on your days with ESPN. Your commentary, I think, is second to none. Your insight in hockey is unbelievable. I listen to you all the time on XM during the day, and I would think that you would make a superb coach in the NHL.
I'm going to give you about – we'll give you about 10 minutes to stop all of this, okay?
No, keep going. By the way, have you ever had the desire to coach?
I ever? Yeah. I actually coached soccer for 7 years.
No, we're talking hockey.
I know that. No, exactly. I had a desire to coach, but I didn't have a desire to invest what I knew I would have to invest to be successful in that field. And I wouldn't have gone into it without the idea of being as successful as I could. I didn't want to do that to my family. I wanted to raise a family.
That's very good. That's very admirable. Alan, anyway, now that we've gotten Bill's deep personal insights, what can we do for you?
I have a quick question regarding the Stanley Cup. I have heard, and actually I've heard it on the on XM radio, are there actually two of them, one that always stays in Toronto and one that travels? And if there is, how do they know which one is the real one, or are they just identically the same? I'll hang up and listen to your answer on the air. Thank you, guys.
Well, actually, this is a secret, so I'm only telling just you. Nobody else listen.
Pay attention.
There is the real Cup. And that's the one that we take on the road, and it goes to all the important occasions. There is a replica, because when people go to the Hall of Fame, they want to see what the cup looks like. But some, I don't, I think they know how to tell them apart. I think it's like when you have twins, you know, you never mix them up. You know which is which.
The replica is made of copper.
The replica looks like the real one.
It does, but it never travels, does it?
No, we leave one in the hall so that people going to the hall, because the real one is on the road a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you know, it's been to your events, but that is...
And I asked that question, and people said, how do we know this in the replica? And Mike Bolt said the replica never travels.
Exactly. The replica never travels. It stays put. And they know the difference, because one of these is well over 100 years old. but what it's a great question, and... we would always just tell the truth. Yes, there is a replica.
Sure, but imagine families going to the Hall of Fame and go, where's the cup? I mean, there is better than nothing.
Well, and also the notion of getting the sense of what it looks like with all the names on it and everything else.
Right.
You know, I hope there weren't a lot of people listening who think we've somehow, you know, done the equivalent of saying there is no Santa Claus or Easter Bunny by suggesting that there is a replica. And if you're at the Hall of Fame right now, you may want to ask which one you're looking at. I'm not sure where the cup is today, but, you know, the cup's probably on the road 200 days a year.
No doubt.
That was a great question,
yeah,
though.
Yeah, really.
Why don't we go to Darren in Virginia? And you're on with Bill and Gary. This is Sirius XM.
Hey, gentlemen. How you doing?
We're good. How about you?
Good, good. Hey, I've got two quick questions. One is, can you tell me how it switched from the different conference names, you know, the Western and Eastern, from the Campbell Conference and whatnot? Could you give me the history about that? And the second one is if Gary Thorne is ever going to make a comeback to calling NHL games, because I really enjoyed that with he and Mr. Clement when they called the games.
Thanks. Shall I take the last part first? Because I just spent 4 days in a recording studio with Gary Thorne in Vancouver doing the EA Sports 2010 NHL video game.
And you'll be able to
hear Gary doing the Frozen Four on ESPN from the Verizon Center in Washington. And undoubtedly, since Gary is still an ESPN guy, if and when hockey ever goes back to ESPN, I'm going to make an educated guess, and it's probably a good one as long as he's there, that Gary will be back doing hockey. But hockey has to get back to ESPN first, because Gary is an ESPN guy first.
Or maybe Gary moves to NBC or Versus. Why is it that everybody focuses on us going back to ESPN? We love Versus.
I know that.
Repeat after me. We love Versus.
You love Versus.
Well, you have a little bit of a personal history, but that's okay.
No, it's only because Gary's an ESPN guy.
But he may not always be an ESPN guy.
He may. That's true.
That's my point.
I said, as long as he is an ESPN guy, which I think will be forever. He is an ESPN guy.
How do you know we're not going to be a Versus guy forever?
How do I know what?
That the league won't be with Versus forever.
I don't. I said if and when hockey goes back.
I'm just giving you a hard time. what was the first question? We got
it was about the conference,
the
divisions
conference
and the conference names.
I have to take, I assume, primary responsibility for that. While we were expanding in the 90s, while we were realigning, and we had lots of teams in new places, either by relocation or expansion, we decided that it would probably make some sense to go with designations that were a little easier if you weren't a longtime fan of the game to follow your particular team, although we still give out the conference trophies and the names of the people originally so honored. So we kind of did a little bit of both, East, West, but we still give out the Wales and Campbell trophies.
Made a lot of sense. I remember years into the Patrick, the Smythe, the Norris, et cetera, that a lot of people still didn't know who was where.
Well,
at least you've got a geographic fighting chance this way.
And in fact, you know, I said for our newer fans, actually there were a lot of older fans who had trouble remembering which end was up. And so
did the players.
No.
I wrote a column in Calgary after 3 years of the realignment with Patrick and Norris and everything. I asked all the players, not one player knew which teams were in which division.
So you like the
geographic.
Yes.
Yes.
It makes a little more sense.
Well, only 1,000 times more sense.
Well, thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Despite what we went through on the ESPN Versus thing, but that's okay. Speaking of cheap shots, why don't we take Rick from Kentucky, because I just noticed he has a question about that. You're on with Bill and Gary. This is Sirius 208, XM 204.
Right. I got two questions real quick. Why don't we see more fines to after you review the plays, because there's an awful lot of hits to the head and that I've been seeing lately. Same maybe with diving, because if you penalize them with their money, maybe they'd stop doing it.
Actually, on both of those, hockey operations does levy fines, and the effect of the fine as opposed to a suspension still makes the player a repeat offender, so that if there's another shot that would require supplemental discipline, the player gets fined or has salary withheld at a higher rate. We typically don't publicize those. They go more in the form of a warning. The same thing is true with diving. There's a diving list that goes out that hockey operations keeps track of and circulates, and repeat offenders get increased discipline as it goes on. It's just when we're at the stage of, obviously, when there's a suspension, everybody knows it because the player isn't available to play, so we announce that. But with respect to fines, we treat that more like housekeeping. But the players know that they're being held accountable at a higher level and with more severe discipline when the next time comes along.
Publish the diving list.
You think?
Yeah,
we
I do.
We don't want to, you know,
add embarrassment
players.
To...
No, and also have players unduly... characterized in a certain way. We hope that they dive once and learn. We hope they don't dive at all, but if they dive once, they understand they shouldn't do it again.
Okay, we'll publish their names after they dive three times.
Well, you'll know, because by then they may get suspended.
Yep, all right. We're going to have to suspend operations here for a second. We're going to take a break. When we come back, John Davidson, the president of the St. Louis Blues, will join us. We appreciate your patience, callers. Just stay on hold. We will get to your calls as soon as we get a chance here on the NHL Hour.
This is Rick Nash of the Columbus Blue Jackets, and you're listening to the NHL Hour with Commissioner Gary Bettman on NHL Radio. Now, back to Commissioner Bettman.
Welcome back, everyone, to the NHL Hour. Gary Bettman, Bill Clement. We left you before with Ode to Elizabeth Reed from the Allman Brothers, and we come back to the Grateful Dead.
Obviously, your selections.
No,
and they're good.
Actually, I think they're getting the hang of what I like. On Sirius XM, I think it's Sirius 14 and XM 46. See, they have all the numbers messed up. Last weekend, they ran a thing where they had the 33 most influential albums in classic rock history.
Oh.
I was on a mini road trip, which I'll spare everybody where I went and what I did, but I ended up that night after about 300 miles of driving in Albany to watch Cornell play Yale in the ECAC finals. And so I was in the car for about 5 hours that day, and I was in heaven listening to that music. So that is...
What was number one? Do you remember? Or were you listening that long?
You know, I did. I remember listening. Yeah, I heard most of them. I forget what number one was. No, I don't think John Delapino suggesting it was Sgt. Pepper. I don't think so. It was... I don't remember.
It'll come to you.
Somebody from Sirius should let us know. It is a great list. I don't know if they put it online, but it was, in terms of my taste in music, I was thrilled. You know, there were about four or five albums I didn't like, but the rest I loved.
Maybe so, J.D. knows.
I don't know. Is J.D. on the line?
Good afternoon, guys.
How are
hey,
you?
J.D.
Doing a lot of listening, but I haven't learned anything yet.
You haven't learned anything yet? Thanks for that endorsement of what we've been doing here all afternoon.
No. I mean, the last minute. I'm just trying to figure out what album was number one.
Well, hopefully we'll get it. Greg Baldingen's on the case. Hey,
how you guys doing?
We're doing great. You're doing great. I'd mentioned before, and I don't know if you were listening to the beginning of the show, I commented that I think, if I'm correct, the Blues were in last place on February 21st. How does it feel to be in really great position to have a shot to make the playoffs, you know, less than 2 months later?
Yeah, it feels good, Gary. And hi, Bill. It's gratifying in a lot of ways that knowing that the patience that we've had to afford ourselves trying to reconnect in St. Louis and rebuild this franchise, that we're seeing some benefits of that patience and staying with our game plan and not getting away from it. We have one home game left. It's going to be a sellout. That'll be 29 sellouts on the season, which is, these people here are fantastic. And when we got here a couple of seasons ago, we had four. And one of them was the Brett Hull night where we retired his jersey, and the other one was a free food night. So only two of them for actual sellouts. So to have our fans respond the way they have and really pay attention to us and enjoy the product and have a good time when they go to the games at the Scott Trade Center, it's really quite gratifying. And on top of that, it's all about the players. The players have been pushed by the coach, who's done a great job, his staff, but the players themselves are the ones that provide the entertainment, and they've done just a marvelous job.
But you and your staff have really remade this team since you went to St. Louis a couple of years ago. What do you think the secret is to this re-engagement?
Well, I think, first of all, we've been very honest with our fans. You know, we promised no more than hard work and wouldn't be outworked when we first got here. And we promised that we'd do it the right way. And the response that we've gotten lately, guys, is that the fans here don't want to see our young players get moved out for any type of quick fix. They want to grow up with our guys. They want to see them learn the game, grow up, mature as players, all under the umbrella of the St. Louis Blues. You can't do that for everybody, but you sure can do it if they're good players. And that's kind of the plan more than anything else. We've also spent a lot of time, and our players have been great with it, in the community here. It's there's over 40 years of history in St. Louis with the Blues, and people are just ready to embrace. And our players spend a lot of time doing a lot of things that are, some of them are talked about publicly, others are not. They just do a wonderful job. So our organization has always told the city that we would be part of their community without question, and I think it's very much appreciated. We're still a team that, with the 29 sellouts, have low season ticket and low ticket prices. And I think that as we eventually move along here, that may change some. But I think the fans understand that, too. We want to keep our guys. So it's been good. We've had lots of bumps, and we had a real bump last night when Chicago played great and we didn't. But that's all part of the sport.
You mentioned history, Blues being in St. Louis for 40 years, and not to make you feel old, it's almost hard to imagine that it's been 30 years since you led the Rangers to the Stanley Cup Final in 79. Do you see any similarities between your experience with the Rangers and now being back with the Blues, who you also played with at one point?
Yeah, I played 2 years, Gary, here in St. Louis. My first year was a good year. That was the year that Dennis Potvin won Rookie of the Year, well-deserved. My second year here, I played well enough to get traded. I went to New York and really enjoyed my time there. And then coming back, I saw the other day something about, somebody said, 1979, blah, blah, blah. And I'm starting to think about all the guys. And the Rangers this past fall had a reunion of the club. Don Maloney and I were not able to make it, but it was a golf outing and they had a great time. And to think of all those guys, there was a lot of youth on that team that did very well. And there was some veterans like Carol Vadney and Phil Esposito, amongst others, that helped us. But, Gary, I think you learn along the way, and fortunately for people like Bill and myself, able to do all those playoff games and see all those series and see how organizations are run and see how players play. And you try to learn, and now I have to reach back and try to say what happened back then and what did they do over there and what made this team so good, et cetera. And you try to just pick and choose a little bit of information from all those different areas and hope you make good decisions. The one thing I've learned here is patience. Boy, you just can't lose your sense of being and make a quick decision. It has to be thoughtful and well thought out. Otherwise, you get yourself into a big bunch of trouble.
The notion of having patience, was that hard for you to come by? Was it easy to make the transition from being a broadcaster to running a club? Was it what you expected, or was it something beyond which you from all your time being associated with the Rangers as a broadcaster and all your national broadcasting, did you think it was really going to be quite the way it turned out?
The toughest part was two things. One is that I never knew there was such a disconnect between the Blues themselves and the city of St. Louis and the surrounding area. I knew the team had to be rebuilt, but I didn't know the other thing had to be rebuilt too. So We just rolled up our sleeves and went to it. And actually, once we gained the trust of the people, it's been good. The other part was when you don't play well and you lose, and you go on these streaks where you lose quite a few games, you really it eats away at you. Yet, and you get home and you don't want to talk to your wife, and the dog gets in the way, and maybe the only one that likes you is the dog. But when you wake up in the morning, you're fresh, and you go, you know what? This is what you signed up for. This is why you left New York. This is, you knew it was going to take a lot of time to be able to do this the right way, and you just roll up your sleeves and back you go again, and you just hope that all the things you do, such as moving players for picks, and you'd make the picks. They're no more than names in the wind, but once they get to your organization. You find out that the staff has done a great job with who they picked, with people like David Perron and T.J. Oshie and Patrick Berglund and Roman Polak, amongst many others. So we're really excited about the future of the Blues here. I know we've been on a pretty good run lately. It'd be wonderful if we could get in. I'd love to have a chat with you, Gary, to maybe see if we can get 10 teams in on each side instead of 8 in the future.
Well, I thought you were going to want to talk to me about the officiating. By the way, Oshie was named the Rookie of the Month of March today.
So, yeah, so really happy about that. Talk about a kid that's a rink rat that has a smile on his face. He plays his tail off every shift. He's full of energy. He's got skill. He can avoid hits. He can throw hits. He's just a bundle of energy, and he can liven the crowd up. Boy, in St. Louis, he can, by himself, and this is a rookie, just take 19,000 people and just put them on the edge of their seats in a lot of different ways. He's been spectacular, and I just wish that he hadn't have missed the 25 games with a high ankle sprain, because we would have been in a better place in the standings, I can tell you that. We really like the future of this kid, and he just loves the game. Flat out loves the game.
And he seems to be typical, because like the 79 Rangers, as you mentioned before, there seems to be an interesting mix of youth and experience. You've got Tkachuk and McDonald, and you've got a ton of great young prospects.
Yeah, that 79 team had the Murdochs and the Maloneys, David and Donnie, and Lucia and Devlois, and it was just a bunch of young guys. And you even look back today and you run into some of these guys, some of them scouts, some of them are in private business. You run into them in different cities, and those were great days being part of a run to the finals. Unfortunately, we didn't win, but we sure had fun being a part of it with New York. Ron Greschner is another one. There was some good quality players. Yeah, here we're like that too. And, we're in a position now where we don't have to fast-track the young players as much. I mean, if we've always been one that if people are in college, finish your college if you want to. Just do what you need to do, and if you don't, come on out, and we'll get you to the organization in the right way. We don't want to force people into anything. We have a good farm club in the American League in Peoria. So we're in a good place now with player development. We don't have to fast-track, and I think the future for us in St. Louis is pretty good right now.
Talk about Chris Mason. He made his 28th consecutive start and goal last night. I guess in your day of goaltending, that used to happen all the time. And unless you're Marty Brodeur, that doesn't happen a lot now. Talk about it as a former goaltender and as president of the club.
Well, early in the year, he had some unfortunate luck, Gary. He developed appendicitis, had to have surgery, missed some time. Got back in there, and he'd end up losing games 2-1, 1-0, 2-1, 3-2. In other words, even if he played well, we didn't score enough goals for him for whatever reason. It was just fate. And then when we made a move where we moved Manny Legacy to Peoria in the American League, it was Chris's job, and he just took it, and he's taken right off with it. I know he's played a lot of games lately, and we've watched it regarding his practice hours and trying to make sure he gets as much rest as possible. The other thing is that with him not playing all the games in the first half, it certainly puts him into a position where he was ready for the wear and tear of the second half. And on top of that, the team has played better, where we're not giving up nearly the quality scoring chances, nor the amount of scoring chances as we used to. So that makes his job somewhat easier. But we've been blessed with his determination. Gary's a great guy. I remember a game earlier in the season in Chicago. I went downstairs after the game, and he was outside the locker room carrying the bags with the trainers just to help them out. Just a really good, a good guy in the community. So it's been successful for him, and he's earned it. He's been good for us. If you don't have it, you have an issue, and he's certainly helped us.
Talking about not having an issue, competitive balance has been incredible this year. You had a tough loss last night against Chicago, and it seemed that you had their number most of the season. Talk about that game and then rebounding to play Detroit tonight. Obviously another important game.
Yeah, we lost 3-1 last night, and I think the score flatters us. We weren't very good from the drop of the puck to start the game all the way through, and I think as a team, there wasn't one or two guys that didn't play well. It was the whole team, and I guess it just happens. So we feel that going into Detroit tonight, and of course they're going to be hungry. They've lost a couple in a row. We'll play much, much, much better as a team. You know, in our remaining schedule, we go into Dallas for a game on Saturday, then go into Phoenix, come home for Columbus, then into Colorado to finish it up. So we'd love to find a way to get a point or two tonight in Detroit, and that'll set us up for the last four games. The balance, Gary, is really something. You know, you sit at home every night and watch games, and some of them you don't know who to pull for. You hope there's not a three-pointer. You see teams that are just working their tails off. It's been fantastic. And, you know, we can talk about the late-season stretch of all these quality games, but I look at it and I say, yeah, that's great. It is. It's fascinating. But I could also say from the start of the season on, the games, there's no easy games. There just isn't.
Well,
and I think that's beneficial to the fan. I mean, there's just games are exquisite from start of the season on.
Well, actually, with a win tonight, you could actually leapfrog over Nashville and Anaheim and jump from ninth to seventh.
Yeah, of course it is. That's why I'm saying let's get 10 teams in, okay? It'll save a lot of ulcers and heart attacks with people like me.
we're talking to John Davidson, president of the St. Louis Blues. JD, one last question before you go. Talk about your thoughts in the Blues opening next season facing the Red Wings in Stockholm.
Really excited. I think it's for the brand of the St. Louis Blues. You know, we're a Midwestern city, and we think it's a great city. We have over 50 alumni that live here in St. Louis that just love it. I think I'd love to have the whole world know that the St. Louis Blues are a well-run, good organization with a great future, and what a better way to tell people than going worldwide with our game. The game is worldwide, and it's a fascinating, fun game to watch. I think it's getting better and better on television, and for people in Europe to have a chance to see our guys play, plus our European guys to get a chance to go home and play, it all makes sense for us. I think it's just a great idea.
Well, thank you for being with us. And by the way, since you said you didn't learn anything in our intro coming into you, the number one album of classic rock was Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon. Not a choice that I would argue with at all.
And by the way, just a quick note before I run here. We as people in management get excited during games. And I can tell you the officiating's never been better. And I mean that sincerely.
I'm glad. I hope we're taping this. JD.
Can I tell that story quick about the time I was on the phone with you and I was mad about the officiating and bang, bang, we scored two goals when I was on the phone with you and we won the game?
Yes, you can tell the story. You know what? It's your passion for the game, either when you were playing behind the mic and now, that makes this game great. So good luck to you and the Blues the rest of the season, and thanks for being with us.
Yeah, my pleasure. Anytime, gang. Take care. Thanks.
See you, JD. What a class act. Was as a player, was as a broadcaster, and continues to be as a president of the St. Louis Blues, and what a run they are on. We're going to get back to your calls. Appreciate your patience. If you'd like to step in line, now's the chance to chat with the commissioner of the NHL, 877-645-6696, 645-6696. Back to the NHL Hour right after this.
Hi, this is Mark Stahl. You're listening to the NHL Hour with Commissioner Gary Bettman on NHL Radio. Now, back to Commissioner Bettman.
Welcome back, everyone, to the NHL Hour. Gary Bettman with Bill Clement. That was a long introduction for Pink Floyd as a lead back in, but it was worth it, especially very timely since we just identified Dark Side of the Moon as the number one most influential album.
This show's making up for last week's.
Is it? Why is that?
Already. I think it just seems to have a little bit greater synchronization level than last week. There were some technical issues last week. Not anybody's fault.
I'm having more fun this week.
Me too. So is Greg Baldinger.
and since we're having fun, that's probably true, Greg. And you know, Mike from San Jose has been holding for 36 minutes. And that doesn't sound like fun. So let's talk to Mike. You're on with Bill and Gary. This is Sirius 208 XM 204. And thanks for holding on.
Hey guys, thanks for finally taking my call. Hey, I had a question, two questions really quick. Question number one, can you explain to me, like, regarding the NBC schedule for hockey in general? I'm not the only guy that ever seems like they either play Detroit, Washington, Pittsburgh, or Philadelphia on that network. Are they able to put teams like the Sharks or Detroit, I mean, depending on how they're doing in the year, can they change their schedule around, or are those games predetermined regardless of their current record?
No, actually, we have a concept called flex scheduling. And what we do is we put together two or three, sometimes four games, and then 2 weeks in advance, NBC picks the matchup that it thinks will get the most attention, which translates into they study it hard. Dick Ebersole, Ken Schanzer, and the staff there have a long, illustrious track record in sports on television, and they pick the game that they think the most people will watch and that will get the highest rating. And we actually have pretty good discussions about what alternatives may be suitable and teams we might want to expose in advance of the playoffs. And we don't always agree, but in the final analysis, it's their call to make. But they do have options. We don't completely lock it in, you know, 6 or 8 months in advance when we're doing the schedule. But that is a very good question. And Versus has some flexing opportunities. I think they have 4 or 5 times during the season where they can opt to change a game to get a game that they think will be more attractive. Listen, the schedule maker has a tough time, and part of what we do when we start doing the schedule is looking at television matchups that we think will be interesting on a national basis. But it's hard to do that in June and early July in advance of the season. Players, you know, move between teams. Sometimes there are injuries. Sometimes teams don't play as well as you thought. But again, we do build some flexibility into the schedule. But in the final analysis, they pick the games that they think will get the highest rating. Let's go to our next caller, which would be Scott in Connecticut. You're on with Bill and Gary. This is Sirius XM.
Hi, gentlemen. It's good to be back on the show with you.
Good to be with you.
It was almost perfect synchronization with JD if I was the first caller after him. Because he commented on the officiating never being better, and I have to agree with one example, and then before I hang up, lead with a constructive criticism.
Okay.
I was at the East Regionals for NCAA tournament in Bridgeport last weekend, and I have never seen a more confusing officiated game in all of my life as we sat there for 12 minutes in double overtime wondering what they were looking at. And I just want to compliment the NHL referees for always keeping not only the people in attendance but the viewers at home in the loop as to what is being looked at and discussed with Toronto. My criticism is on something that I've been seeing a lot more of lately in recent games. I know that holding the stick is a penalty, and I know that playing with a broken stick is a penalty. One thing I don't see called that often is when a player loses his stick and the opposition either kicks it away or swipes at it with his stick. And I'm just wondering why that's not a penalty and if it will be looked at and discussed in future meetings. Thanks, guys, and have a good night.
Well, it is a penalty, isn't it? If you push a player's stick further away from him so that he can't get it, then it's a call. That's different than a stick just being in the way in the corner and a player moving it
to
get it out of the way as opposed to away from his opponent.
And, in fact, the officials will sometimes pick up the remnants of a broken stick.
They will.
Absolutely.
But even a dropped stick, player will move it out of the way. And Ian LaPerriere, the Colorado Avalanche, got called for that the other night. Pretty sure it was Ian. He pushed a stick out of the way just because he was trying to, and it hit the puck that was being passed back to the point, and they called him, gave him an unsportsmanlike penalty for it. But the refs watched that. It's an interesting call, too. That's an interesting point that the caller makes.
It is, and with respect to the college game, the one in question, it was a puck that went through the net, not into the net, and they were trying to detect how the puck got into the net. You know, replay's tough. And I know it sometimes gets a lot of scrutiny, but our guys, particularly, it's one of the reasons we do it out of a central location. You know, they're doing 7,000 reviews that people don't know about. Every puck that goes in the net or is close to the net is reviewed. They probably do 800 tough reviews, our guys, a season, and having the same group of people do it gives you the level of expertise to get it right. I think in the course, do they get it right every time? No, they probably make a couple of mistakes. But in the course of a season with all these reviews, it's less than a handful of mistakes. And I'm glad that between JD and our most recent call, people are feeling good about officiating as we go down the stretch drive, as other people will get cranky about officiating, as frequently happens. Why don't we take Michael in Connecticut, and you're on with Bill and Gary.
I'm going to ruin your last point.
No, you're going to disagree. You're not going to ruin it, you know.
Okay.
But go ahead.
My question is in, I'm a diehard Rangers fan, and regarding Sean Avery and whether or not the NHL reviews calls made on an individual game basis, because it seems like while Avery is not exactly the poster boy for the NHL, he seems, Tortorello seems to have him on a short leash, and he seems to be doing what he should be doing. But he seems to be getting mugged out there a bit, and it doesn't seem to be getting called.
Let me respond to that, because you're not the first person who suggested it. I actually called in to the fan in New York this morning with Boomer and Carton when they were talking about it, and they demanded to speak to me. So, you know, what the heck, they're good guys. And they're hosting a luncheon that I'm being honored at next week, so it was the least I could do. But the fact of the matter is, the officials have not been given any special instructions. You know, there's a lot of physical contact out there. If you're agitating, you know, you probably get into mixing it up a little bit more. And I, you know, Sean Avery's back. There's no history to it. He's playing. He's had a seamless transition back, but I think the suggestion but in some quarters, particularly by Ranger fans, that somehow he's being victimized, I think is a little bit of a stretch. The officials are calling it as they see it, and frankly, things are happening too fast out there where they're not focusing on who the player in question is. All they're doing is calling what they see, and that's the instructions they have night in, night out with regard to who the player is. But I understand, sure. This is the time of year where passions, you know, and views of what happened out there take on a little bit of a rooting interest.
Sean goes into a lot of high mugging areas, too.
Well,
I think he tries to initiate the mugging, and it's hard to make that call at that point because he goes in trying to help his team to draw penalties, so he'll stick his nose and his face in there all the time.
Hey, he's playing hard, and he's playing well. And I think, again, the point that Sean is victim, I think that's a little bit tough. He's a big boy. He takes care of himself out there. And the officials consistent. By the way, going to the first point of the question, every game is watched. Every call and non-call is analyzed and logged. And so to the extent the officials are not doing what they're supposed to be doing, they're held accountable for it. They're critiqued. Their coach, Steve Walkham, who's the chief of officiating, is actively involved in watching everything that's going on out there. So, you know, we try to play on level ice for all players and all teams. Goes to the integrity discussion we had
right.
A couple of weeks ago.
Sure.
Let's see. Who's been holding for a while? That would
Rick.
Be Rick in North Carolina. You're on with Bill and Gary, Sirius XM.
Hey, guys. How are you doing?
We're okay. Call. Thank you for calling and holding on so long.
Yeah. The question I have is, I'm originally from Iowa down in North Carolina. I get the center ice package to watch the Senators games. Now, more often than not, at least lately. We've been getting both the home feed and the away team feed. But at no point this season, regardless of which Canadian team was playing, unless they were on Saturday nights on the NHL Network, do we get the HD Canadian feed? And I've called DirecTV, and they said it's a center ice thing. I've talked about sent stuff to center ice, and they said it's a DirecTV thing. So is that something that might be worked on next year? Because there's several times that we don't get the HD feed from the Canadian team markets, which, and we know that they're showing them or broadcasting them in HD up there because they're advertising them and everything else.
Actually, the both answers you got were right. Part of it is a function of what feeds we can easily get and use from Canada, and part of it is the capacity on DirecTV at any given point in time, because their capacity isn't unlimited. Our goal, ultimately, is to get all games in HD available on the Center Ice package. The number of HD games on DirecTV, on Center Ice, has been increasing, and we're going to continue working in that direction. It's better than it's been, and we're going to continue to work, particularly for next season and beyond, to make it even better yet. So be patient with us. But, you know, it's funny how we all get a little used to things. Spoiled would be too wrong a word, because 10 years ago, if I could tell you could have any access to any feed when you're out of market, you'd think we were crazy. And it's evolved into really something special for sports fans, hockey fans in particular, because you can get just about any game any night. And we think that's terrific. And also, now I'll make a plug for us as opposed to SiriusXM. If you sign up for Game Center Live on NHL.com, you can watch four games at once, and you get to choose all sorts of activities, interactivity, availability, statistics, you name it. It's all good. And the NHL Network in the U.S. airs Hockey Night in Canada and some TSN games as well, and they're typically in HD also. So sometimes in addition to the Center Ice package, you need the NHL Network. Let's go to our next caller, and that would be Ron in Cincinnati.
How gentlemen doing?
We're okay. Good. How about you?
Okay. I got a couple of, a question, a quick point, and I'll hang up and listen. The question I wanted to ask you, Gary, is any progress made with MSG on their HD feed on DirecTV? And the question, over the last month, it's been a lot of talk about the greatest goaltender. He might not have been the greatest goaltender of all time, but I can tell you Grant Fuhr was one of the most exciting goaltenders out there. And thanks a lot. Listen, hang up and listen.
Grant Fuhr was a terrific goaltender. And, you know, who is the greatest? That always comes up when somebody sets a new record. Marty Brodeur, obviously, based on having the most wins in goaltending history, he'll probably continue to add to that record and set the record for shutouts as well. His durability has been incredible. But, yeah, there have been some great goaltenders, and Fuhr, I think, would be considered one of them, particularly from his era with the great Edmonton teams. With respect to MSG, the good news is the lawsuit has been settled, and our hope is that working together we can make sure that all of the MSG HD feeds will ultimately be available on Center Ice Package.
By the way, did I get chewed out today by a fan that sent an email saying when the talk of the greatest goaltenders comes up, how come you never mentioned Bernie Parent? You wouldn't even have a Stanley Cup ring if it were not for Bernie Parent.
That's a fair comment.
It was absolutely fair, and I said, you know what? From now on, I'm always going to mention Bernie, and I said it then, I'll say it again, for at least 4 years. At least 4 years, Bernie was the best goalie in the world. If not for an eye injury, his numbers would be up with the greatest that ever played.
And I've seen him at some NHL events recently, and he is a really good guy.
Isn't he?
Yes.
He's fantastic. Our thanks to all of the callers today. Great questions. We love hearing from you. Also, our thanks to our friend.
But I have to add one thing. Do you know Grant Fuhr has the most game appeared in by a goaltender in one season at 79?
No, I did not.
See that? Makes the point.
Then he's the best that ever played. And the fans are the best that ever called. At least today and at least until next week. We'll see you next week, 4 o'clock Eastern, right here for the NHL Hour. Espo and Rossi are up next in the slot. And you know what? By next week, we may have some playoff matchups. Enjoy, everybody.
For more podcasts, check out NHL.com. This is NHL Radio.